I'm Jeff Hampton, and welcome to the Legacy Builders Podcast. I have helped hundreds of investors protect their assets and maximize cash flow in order to help them create a path to generational wealth. Too often, hardworking high performers find that the structure of their investments not only cause liability, but also create tax issues. And it is my job as a lawyer to ensure that it is never the case. Each week, I will provide the tools, the tips, and the strategies to create maximum wealth in real estate and other investments, as well as interview some of the most successful people that have created their own path to legacy wealth. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Legacy Builders Podcast. I'm excited today to have a special guest, Josh Cadillac. Listen, this guy's going to be an inspiration for you. There's somebody, when I get a chance to meet somebody like Josh, who's accomplished what he has as a realtor and a speaker, and I have a lot of respect for someone who can speak the way that he can. I'm excited to introduce everybody, you here today, Josh, to everyone. So tell us a little bit about those that don't know you. What exactly do you do?
Well, I've been a top producing real estate agent for about 15 years now. I run a real estate investment fund. I also run a general construction company, so I am a licensed GC in Florida, which is actually not the easiest thing or place to have that. But really what I find myself doing most, Jeff, today is teaching. I am on the road speaking probably 200 days a year. I've written a bunch of CE courses for both real estate and other fields that are approved for continuing education, as well as a bunch of keynotes. And I'm typically talking about a handful of topics that are usually problematic, but largely it's centered around investment. My passion has always been investment and investment in real estate. I think it's one of the best ways to build wealth and the best way to pass along generational wealth that exists. Getting your head around the tax advantages that we have. It's like somebody said, hey, how do we make the rules totally not fair in favor of this one investment type? And then how do we get a bunch of people trained to sell it and have them have no clue how it works? That would be the real estate industry today.
Well, that's, first of all, just you walking through what you've done. You've run as a GC in Florida, realtor business, but also a speaker. But you kind of immediately led me to an area that I'm intrigued about. What led you to the teaching and the educational piece on this? You know, there's a lot of people out there that have maybe run multiple businesses, but what has kind of inspired you to do that?
I'm going to say, if I wanted to nail it down and be really honest with you, Jeff, insecurity. And I say insecurity because when I started in the real estate business, unlike what is how mainstream real estate is taught, they give you a license, they smack you in the butt, they say, go sell real estate. And you're like on the way out with your license in your hand, like, but I don't know how. Like, you didn't tell me, like, nothing you trained me for when you gave me this license in any way prepared me to handle the scale and scope of financial transaction that you're asking me to do. So I was always in the position, maybe it was how I was raised, like, you never ever risk somebody else's money. You want to blow your own money, you do it, but you never, I mean, the shame, forget for yourself, your family, like, you know, you never do that, right? And so I felt like I needed to learn it a lot better than how they taught it to me. So I chased all the education I could, Jeff. I mean, I took everything. When I send the email with like the full Monty email with all the designations, like 40 some odd designations I have and certifications, it means nothing. It means nothing, because what I wound up with was this huge sense of all the stuff that was actually missing from what I really needed to know to do this job and this business well. And I learned that stuff from my father, who was a successful businessman and a successful investor and honestly a successful human being. And so, you know, how you run a business needs to be a reflection of the life that you want to live. And the idea that, like, you just do business to make money and then, you know, you live your life on the side, that's just a complete, a massive way to only enjoy failure and fall short of what you're capable of, right? And that's the lie that most people bought into. So I recognize there's this huge gap between what you need to know and what you actually know. And then if that wasn't enough, I started to do really well in real estate, started to make a bunch of money. And I said, you know what? I didn't go to college out of high school. I'm curious. What did I miss? So I went, paid out of pocket, and just started taking classes. And the best way to go to, Jeff, the best way to go to college. I went there just simply because I wanted to learn stuff, right? In my spare time, for the hell of it. Like, I didn't need to pass a test. I didn't need to read a book. But at the same time, high type A, had to carry a 4.0, doing all the extra credit work, had all my homework done in the first 2 weeks of class. I'm like, I'm that guy, right?
One of the things, I'll piggyback off of that for you, sure, and ask you a question about. So, you know, when I look at somebody like yourself and have an opportunity to meet people who have excelled in their craft and what they do, what role, I mean, first of all, just to have the mindset, I still believe mindset's an enormous piece of where they're headed and whether or not they're going to end up being successful. And personal growth equals business growth, equals career growth. And from your perspective, it had to have been a strange feeling to be sitting there and you get out there and you're supposed to start selling and no one's really educated you on this stuff. And you're trying to figure out, wait a minute, is this how everybody does things? What led you to take on the ownership piece of deciding, I'm going to learn this myself, and then not just learn this, but I'm now going to start educating. You're about to go speak at a conference now. You're about to do some other things. I find it interesting where you decided not just to take it on yourself or an ownership perspective for your own life, but then to kind of pay it forward to others.
You know, there's one of the things, and in the most recent book that I wrote for McGraw-Hill called Close for Life, I talk a lot about the idea of being the CEO of your own life. In fact, that's probably the next book that they want me to write, is on this idea. Because folks, most of us would never work for us. In other words, like, we would never treat an employee the way we treat ourselves. And one of the things as a CEO, there's a couple of things as a CEO you're never allowed to say, but one of the big ones you're never allowed to say is, it's not my fault. The second you start to complain, the second you start to whine, you turn yourself into a victim. You put yourself in the passenger seat of your own life saying, I hate where I am. I hope it gets better. Gee, will somebody save me? Batman, where are you? Look, there is no friggin' Batman. All right. You got to be your own Batman. And so part of that role of being the CEO is to learn and ask CEO question number one. I'm a big believer in this. What the hell are you going to do about it? Which means anything comes up, anything goes wrong, anything goes sideways, the healthiest place to start is what agency can I take? How can I get out of the passenger seat, get in the driver's seat, and steer into the skid and try to get this car back on the road? I just drove in a blizzard through Montana yesterday from Butte to Missoula. Right? The car starts getting a little sideways. What do? You gotta finesse it. You gotta take it. You gotta use whatever you can to get it back on the road. The reason why, Jeff, is I'm not gonna sit here and wait for some imaginary superhero to come save me. This is my life. I have to take responsibility. I am the CEO of my own life. And if I don't take responsibility, it's a failure of leadership, and that's on me.
So that's a perfect segue into a few questions I had for you on this. You know, part of the podcast that we do here with the Legacy Builders podcast is we're trying to help people to kind of expand their vision and start thinking, what am I going to do? Not just what is somebody else going to do for me? You know, there's kind of this mentality, it seems like today, where whether it's from the government, whether from an employer or someone else, what someone else is going to do for me. But the question becomes, like, I talk to people all the time that say they're in a W-2, right? And they're starting to figure out, like, how can I start to build long-term legacy in terms of building generational wealth? But how do I break free from that? Now, I was going to ask you a second ago, what do you think is part of your, you know, the key to your success? But you just unlocked some of that for me by explaining it, just going right out of the gate and explaining that you take ownership of these issues and you don't look for anyone else to come and rescue you. What kind of advice would you give someone if they're trying to break free from a W-2? And maybe right now they have this insecurity, right? They're sitting there saying, well, I've only ever done it this way, and I want to try to leap out there and do something like Josh has done and really take that risk. There's a lot of people that have a problem with this concept of risk, right? They look at it and they think any risk is unacceptable. What is your position on that? What would you recommend to somebody?
I think it's going to take and start for me, Jeff, with a very honest conversation, which, and the conversation I'm talking about is recognizing the schizophrenia of being a human being, which is that I have these conversations with me that I actually tell nobody about. But in reality, we all know that we have them.
Yeah.
But if we actually admitted it out loud, they'd want to medicate us, right? So we have these conversations, and this is the conversation. I think this is the real honesty, right? Is there a better version of me inside of me that I've never seen? Everybody knows there is. Who is the biggest loser if I don't ever get to see that? It's me. And the second group of people most hurt, if you won't do it for you, the second group of people that's most harmed by that are the people that you love and care for, that you spend the most of your time with. So here's the thing, folks. We all run the risk of dying with our magnum opus still inside of us, our best work left unseen. So where is it that I grow? If I care, if I give a rat's backside about seeing the best this guy can do, where do I find that? Do I find that on the mountaintops? We're all struggling to get to the mountaintop to have the view. I don't grow on the mountaintop. I grow in the valley, which means if I'm going to be a good boss to me, I got to put me in the valley. So this is the thing. If it doesn't suck, you ain't growing. And if you aren't growing, you're not finding out what you could actually do. You could literally be sitting there at the end, and all you could be thinking is regrets of how much there was left in the tank that you never even got a chance to check out. I learned this through years of, you know, like whether it was, you know, athletics where, you know, they told me I never could and I did, to, you know. So maybe the place to explain this brain damage where I kind of learned this lesson is a little bit of a story. My father was born in 1930, all right? And he was a big believer. He had built a successful business, and he was a big believer that young people blow what their fathers built, what the previous generations built, if they're not careful how they're raised, right? Spoiled kids do not respect what went into building something, right? So he said, it's not going to happen on my watch. When I finished fourth grade, he took me out of school. He hired a professional teacher to homeschool me in the afternoons from 1:30 until I finished school. And from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. every day from I was 9 years old on, I went to work for my dad. And I didn't work directly for my dad. No. First, he had me work in general for the operation. And then he found out that I was a lazy little kid. So what did he do? He did what any loving father who lived through the Great Depression and World War II would do. He found a former foreman from his industrial operation in New York, who was notorious for being the meanest son of a gun to work for. He hired this guy out of retirement to come down with one job, to follow me around and ride me like a rented mule. This guy called me every name in the book. Like, if you want to talk about child abuse in this touchy-feely generation, guys, 5 million counts of child abuse. You want to know something? I am so grateful to that old miserable former Marine that was my boss that he was kind enough to be so mean to me, because you know what? That's the kick in the ass that that little kid needed, right? That's what I needed. Sometimes the love looks like pain.
Well, that's so good. You know, first of all, your dad really loved you, right? I mean, that's good stuff right there.
Yeah, it is, man.
Someone's going to take the initiative. Yeah, that's wonderful stuff. And I mean, there's so many things to talk about here, because when you start talking about parenting and but just helping other people understand what he was really teaching you to do is to understand the value of hard work, to understand that if you don't get out there and do it, no one else is going to do it. You got to take ownership. To have that understanding and to embrace that early on. I mean, I'm sure that was a huge part of what you might attribute to your success.
Oh yeah. Look, I mean, I say it on almost every podcast that I'm on, and it's a tribute to the old man, to my father. But one of the most important and poignant things he ever said to me, Jeff, was this. And I mean, got to understand, this is a successful guy. When I say successful, like, I had multiple patents. He had thousands of employees. He bought the second computer IBM ever made. The first one went to the Pentagon. My father bought the second one for $250,000 back in 1950 something. I mean, he was that guy, brilliant. Like, he said to me when I was a kid, I don't care if you grow up to be a floor sweeper. You be the best damn floor sweeper there is. Everything anybody needs to know about your character, they can tell by the way you leave that floor, especially if you don't think anybody's coming to check. When you sweep that floor, that's your floor. And that stuck with me from then on. And one of the reasons why, you know, even when I'm finishing an event and, you know, applause, whatever, thousands of people, as I leave, I always see if there's any plates left on the table. And I try to take and help the people clean up.
That's so good, just from a position of character. But, you know, there's that statement that how you do anything is how you do everything, right?
Yep.
At the end of the day, I have people that come to me sometimes and they say, Jeff, I've got this job. I can't stand it. You know, I'd really love to start building some wealth. I'd love to get into some real estate, but I don't have the money to do it. And I don't feel like I have any real room to grow in the business or for the company that I'm working for. But I'm looking at them. I'm saying, look, how are you embracing where you're at? I think sometimes people have a tendency to live in some reality they wish existed at the expense of the reality they're in.
That they're in.
And I would ask this, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, is I try to help people understand, listen, what are you doing right now where you're at? Because if you work as hard in the business you're in, working as an employer in a W-2, employee as a W-2 position, that's going to break through some barriers for you potentially, either for a new position, whether you're going to get a promotion, whether you're now going to be able to actually get a different job and kind of move up the ladder on that. And then eventually you're going to be able to see yourself, this whole imposter syndrome that's out there that people think that can't do anything and they're limited in what they can do, but it's easy to start complaining about it. What would you tell somebody? Do you have similar thoughts on that end? Or how do you advise someone that comes to you and they're kind of in that stuck mindset?
I think that we need to take and recognize our actions define ourselves to ourselves. In other words, we sometimes are surprised by what we see from ourselves. And those are good moments for us. And we need to surprise ourselves. So maybe the best I could give you on this is a story. There was one day back in my, there was a period where I was in a bodybuilding, right? And so I was training really hard. I was training for competition, which means I was working out a lot and a lot of hours. So one day a friend of mine drew the short straw and he was my gym partner for that day, right? And this guy always was the guy that he gave the sense that he smoked a lot of weed, but he never really did. He just talked like, he's always the guy that just talked like, whoa, man. Like, but he's just that way, right? So he's with me in the gym and we do this 2-hour workout. And I say, all right, now it's Florida. It's the middle of summer. I say, we're going to take off our shirt. We're just going to have our shorts on. We're going to go for like a 5-mile walk jog to like finish this thing out. So we get all the way near the very end. Now we've worked out for 2 hours. We've now been out for like an hour, maybe a little less than that on the road here. And we're a 1/2 mile away from my house. I said, all right, we're going to sprint as hard as we can this last 1/2 mile. And he looked at me and I'll never forget what he said. Looked me right in the eye and he said, what is wrong with you? And I said, Mike, the guy's name is Mike. I said, Mike, you don't get it. The second we make the choice to run right here, we are choosing to do the one thing that 99 out of 100 people won't do. The decision, we have this choice to go one way or the other right now. If we show ourselves as the small little group of the ones that will run, we show that we're the ones that deserve what those 99 other bums won't get. You don't want to be one of the bums. Make the choice that isn't the choice the bums make. Go in there and push yourself a little further, a little harder, and then look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, wait a second. You're still standing. All fingers and toes accounted for. Look at this. Maybe there was more in there than I thought existed. My father gave me this lesson, Jeff, over and over and over again. I mean, I remember being 10, 11 years old and having to work my first 12-hour day. I'm like, but daddy, normal people only work 8. He said, normal people, who cares? You'll live. You know, I mean, that just got pushed further and further. I remember the first time I had to work my first 24-hour day and I had a crew of grown men that I sent home on the first shift. They showed back up again and I'm still at work, filthy, dirty, bleeding from a couple of spots and I'm still going. No, I said, the interesting thing is those guys, grown men, I'm a kid. Those guys would follow me to the end of the earth though, because they saw that I would go. And I didn't know that. I had to learn that about me. Right. Yeah. And this is the thing, Jeff, I think that, you know, it's maybe an unpleasant message to hear, but us putting ourselves to endure the hard thing and show ourselves that we can still take it is an important lesson in our self-development, that in this touchy-feely world of hacks, you know, how to hack it and make it simpler. Yeah. I got the ultimate hack. Do the work. It's easier than all the other stuff that they're going to tell you to do, because at the end of the day, you know you earned the win.
Well, that's good. And actually, one of the things I've learned over time is the doing the work and having to actually walk your way through the vision that you have is, if you take shortcuts, which really there are no such thing as real shortcuts, mm-hmm. but if you try to do that and that's what you seek after, what you are, the resources you have now and the way you think right now is not going to get you to where you want to go. You have got to enlarge yourself, and you have to learn the lessons that you must learn in order to get to the place you think you want to be. And that leads me to my next point on this for you. I mean, you kind of walked me through a little bit about your past and just, you know, where you've grown both from a child and the experience with your father. And then as you began to become a, you know, as a realtor and GC, as a GC, and then now as an educator, kind of as a speaker, and really as a big influence out there in the space. My question for you though is like, you know, as you do that, what role does vision have for you? Do you consciously take the time to try to look and see, where am I going? Where is my vision? What are my goals? And then apply that hard, strong work ethic behind that.
I think I actually work at it from the opposite side, Jeff, which is this. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in this. I think you start from the end and work backwards. When I coach, I always take and start from the end. What do you want to accomplish? Okay, what do we have to do today to get you there? Mm-hmm. So for me, I need, the only way that you have a quality product, whether it's a quality life or a quality watch or a quality anything, all starts from one place: standards. What are the standards that go into the making of that? What are the standards that go into the making of my day and the making of how I do every job that I do, right? So where do standards come from? Well, if the end is the place that we got to start, the place I start is the eulogy. What do I want somebody to be able to say about the guy they're putting in the box? They're getting ready to put me in the ground. What do I want them, not blowing sunshine up my butt? I want, what can I honestly have these people saying with tears in their eyes as they remember the guy that's going in the ground? And so to me, there's, you know, a few things I suppose, but growing up the way that I did, coming out of school, you know what I did on the weekends? I didn't play with the other 10-year-olds. My father's friends would come over, these 60, 70-year-old guys, and they'd play pinochle, and I'd be 10, 11 years old playing pinochle with these older guys from New York. This is how I grew up. And you know what I learned though, Jeff? There was a compliment amongst New York, men from New York. There was a thing they would say. It was a very high compliment amongst men. There's certain compliments amongst men that are what we call like these high compliments. Like if a man that you respect says this about you, it means something. And the thing they would say is, oh, that guy, he's a stand-up guy. Now what that says, what that communicates in that culture is, this is a man that his word is gold. If he says it, doesn't matter what it costs him, it will be done. I want them to be able to say about the guy in the box, hey, you know what, Josh was this, this, and this, but you know what? This was a stand-up guy. What do I have to do today to be that guy in the box?
Man, that's so good, because if you think about it, if that's your standard, first of all, setting high standards, but if you're looking at it, you start with the end in mind and work your way back, and you're looking at it from that perspective, that hitting that standard is going to hit all the touch points of everything else you might would want to accomplish anyway.
Because it does, Jeff.
You know how you
how to do it. Yeah. Like you get to a crossroads, you simply ask yourself, which direction is most in line with my standards? Well, gee, it's now a one way only. Best example I can give you just happened to me. I had been booked to take and do this event in Montana. And the day I wake up to get on the plane, I have the worst case of food poisoning ever. Like I literally threw up for the first time in 30 years. I mean, it was awful. But the guy in the box is a stand-up guy, which meant I had to get my ass on that plane. And I had to take as much Pepto-Bismol and as much, eat as many crackers and do everything I could. And then the next day when I had no sleep and whatever else, I had to take whatever caffeine I had. I had to do whatever I had to fulfill my commitments, because that's what the standards say. I figured out what the end needs to look like. I now know what I need to do today.
That's good, man. And so in the short time that we have left here, as we continue our discussion here, I want to ask you a couple of questions, because look, you've worked as a general contractor. You've also done work, you know, as a realtor. I want to ask you a question that, let's say somebody's coming to you and they're looking to start building wealth and they want to create some leverage in their life. I know you have some experience with single family homes. You have some experience with how maybe you've seen people that you've worked with begin to create some wealth from that. Would that be even in today's market, is that something you still recommend someone if they want to start creating leverage in their life? Is that something you still think is doable in today's market?
Absolutely. Look, if there's one product that I really love still, it's single family. I have been a huge proponent of multifamily for a long time. I'm a little bit more bearish on multifamily only because we have this kind of unique market that exists where we've had student loan repayments start this month, which is pulling a tremendous amount of discretionary funds out of the economy. And without going into a ton of detail, if discretionary spending falls, people are going to do less travel. We have a very interesting bulk of shadow inventory that nobody's really tracking, which are these short-term rental properties that exist. What I'm starting to see is short-term rental properties that are, because of the lack of travel, they're down 30% in revenues from last year to this year. And that was before the student loan repayments restarted. If those properties underperform, they will get reallocated to long-term rentals. And if that happens, it could potentially soften the rental market a little bit. And for that reason, multifamily kind of, I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus. I'm not saying it's a no. I still think if you get into multifamily, you're probably just fine. But of the products that exist, single family to me, or small multifamily like duplex, triplex, fourplex, I think they're still really strong, because as a builder, I can't come in and build them at a price that is competitive to what is in the existing market, which means the ability of the supply side to undercut my valuation doesn't exist. I'm still 100,000 above where market is to build a new house today, right? Like to build that 2,000 square foot house, I have to be at a price point that's 100,000 more than what it really should sell for, which is why you're not seeing new home builders build as quickly as they can, because that construction business, guys, is just so heavily laden with both risk and debt, supply chain issues, labor issues. I mean, I could go into a laundry list. So that being said, single family homes is going to remain a scarce asset as long as that's the case. And as long as we remain in an inflationary environment, guys, simple thing. Home prices never go down when the value of money is going down. They always go up, and they go up faster than they normally do. All right. All history of real estate teaches us that.
So let's say, and first of all, I agree. I mean, you see, one of the most resilient assets is has always been real estate, and I always
find it's shelter. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And there's only a certain amount of land, a certain amount, and particularly in certain areas of growth, certain cities.
Yeah,
I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas, and I mean, I think there were 200,000 people that moved to Fort Worth last year. There's not enough shelter to accommodate people that are moving into certain cities. And so I think the problem is people are seeing, you know, they're seeing interest rates have gone up tremendously. You're up in the 8% range, and people are starting to look at it. And I get a lot of people coming to me saying, Jeff, look, I've got a W-2. I'm thinking about buying my first long-term rental here and getting into a single family home. But, you know, is it too risky? We're back to that concept of risk again, right?
People start Jeff, to worry about enough money. You load me up with so many things I want to say to this, because look, the investment of real estate is one of my favorite things. Here's the thing with investing in real estate. It's not like investing in a stock. You buy GE stock at breakfast and you sell it at lunch, right? Nobody day trades real estate. When you buy real estate, you're buying the future. So here's the crazy thing. When you look at, let's say, buying a property returning a 5% rate of return and you're borrowing 8.5-9% money to do it. Well, it makes no sense. I'm losing 4% on every dollar I borrow. Are you really? Hold on to your hat. Here's the thing. When you buy the property, let's say you have $100,000 and you buy a $400,000 property with debt, right? Let's say you could buy either $100,000 property or a $400,000 property. If you buy the $100,000 all cash and it appreciates 10% over the next 2 years, how much did you make? You made 10 grand. If you borrow and you buy the $400,000 property and it appreciates 10%, how much did you make? You made 40 grand on your 100. Now, here's the other thing. When the rents go up, do you get 100% of the rent growth, or does the mortgage payment change? The mortgage payment stays the same, but 100% of the rent growth belongs to you. It's unlike the other expenses. So here's the thing. Even if you go in a negative leverage position, which obviously I'm not encouraging you to take and you know, go to your eyeballs in debt, you have to take and use debt judiciously. You have to do it, use it the right way. I tell people it's like a chainsaw. You don't just take and say, hey, here's a chainsaw, go to town. You learn to use the chainsaw properly, right? You know, maybe you're not at 70%, 75% LTV today. Maybe you're at 55, 60% LTV to make sure your debt service coverage ratio, that you're generating enough income to pay your debt and some spread. But here's the thing. As your rents go up, guys, do you think during an inflationary market, rents go up? Well, let's review the last 3 years and see what happened. Yeah, the rents go up and the property values go up. As those rents go up and your mortgage payment stays the same, what happens? That mortgage payment represents less and less of the operating income of that property. Here's the thing, folks. In order to take and truly assess the value of a real estate investment, you can't do something like a cap rate. Especially in an environment like today, you have to do what's called an internal rate of return with debt service, especially if you're going to borrow money, right? You have to look at how time affects this, because when you buy real estate, you're buying the future. If you're not quantifying both the appreciation and the rent growth into your assessment, unfortunately, you're not assessing the asset you're actually buying.
Well, that's good. And I will tell you, I agree with everything you're saying. I love every bit of it. There's a lot of people are not educated in understanding the leverage you can obtain through real estate investing. They also, we didn't even talk about the tax benefits, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
Tax benefits, right. I mean, I have people in W-2s. I got a guy that's working as a pharmaceutical sales rep, and he's coming to me saying, hey man, I got to pay less taxes. I said, well, you know, there's really two ways you're going to be able to do that. You're either going to have to invest in real estate, or you're going to have to start a business, right? I mean, those are two of the best ways to be able to save on that.
You need losses, brother.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. You better believe it. And these concepts are so important to teach people on that. And I think what you talked about there is to help understand that. The other side of that equation is I not only own a portfolio of short-term rentals, but I deal with a lot of short-term rental investors every day through my business for asset protection and with STR Law Guys. And one of the things that I find, though, it's important for them to understand, hey, listen, it's great to go out and buy the assets, but you just talked about short-term rentals are a little unique, and that sometimes if you do have an economic downturn, you could end up seeing like places like the Smokies and other areas where you're seeing a 30 to 40% drop in demand. Well, you need to be capitalized sufficiently in your purchases and what you own so that you have got some type of savings to cover you if you go through some lean times on that. Because I've got some people calling me about to file bankruptcy because I don't have any cash flow. I don't have the money to cover all my debt service.
Overextended, so yeah.
This is more of the mindset of, I think the other side of that is to help people understand you can't just go into real estate investing without treating it like a business.
Absolutely. Look, there's two things, right? Whenever I teach investment, because here's the thing, the disconnect between what real estate agents understand and people in general, this is what I was saying to you before when I was, and I didn't finish my thought, was when I went to college, I was blown away at how poor the scholarship actually was by the professors. Like, it's not that they understood their topic really well, but how the world worked in general, they had no concept of. And so the idea that we're prepared in any way to understand how investment works. Guys, the culture in the United States of America does not prepare you in any way to understand how to invest well. So let me give you a summary of the things you need to track. There are two things that an investor cares about, and only two they should care about: risk and return. It is a balancing of those two things. If you're going to increase the risk, I need a higher return to compensate me for the greater risk you're asking me to take on. If you're reducing the risk, I am willing to accept a lower rate of return if you're going to eat more of the risk. Simple assessment. One of the important things to understand to invest well is that you need to understand what you're investing in. So sitting here and just saying, I'm buying real estate, isn't the right play. The right play is to get your head wrapped around what it is that you're taking and considering investing in. You need to understand the business that you're going into, because when you invest in real estate, folks, it is a business. And so learning how to do that well, getting your head wrapped around that, and then figuring out what the exposures are. When you take it, if you're going to work with an agent, find an agent that makes you aware of what the risks are. If you come to an agent and say, hey, look, I got $500,000 to spend, and they immediately show you $500,000 properties without asking you any other questions, fire the bum immediately. If you got $500,000, I'm never showing you $500,000 worth of property. You want to know something? You have $500,000. You come to me and say, I got $500,000 to invest. You want to say to you, is that all the money you have? If that's all the money you have, you don't have $500,000 to invest. You got $425,000. You got $450,000. I need you with cash. I need you with access to liquid capital, because the biggest risk with the asset that I sell is liquidity. Guys, surrounding yourself with the people that get it and are going to look out for you, especially when you're new and you're learning this thing, is such an important part of doing this business well and getting it right. Because the wealth building aspect of what real estate is and does, so many people take advantage of it. And it breaks my heart to think that somebody listening to this might feel like that's not for them.
Well, first of all, the real estate industry needs people like yourself. There's a lot of charlatans out there that I think promote one side of things without showing the other side of it. And it's important for people to have the education to know how to actually go in. And risk is a good thing to take on when you know what you're doing. And you've made sure and made those choices. And so, and man, we could have, I'm going to have you come on again in the future.
Yeah, let's do it, Jeff. Absolutely. I got to go.
You got to go speak. You got to go to people in the same.
500 people in the other room that want to talk to me for some reason. I haven't figured out why they want to talk to me, but they sure did, it seems like.
Oh, we have. We know why they do. But before you go, man, I have a quick question for you. So on your, if you were to give somebody, and you, I think you did give somebody kind of a piece of advice here, but I like people when they listen, if they take the time and they're going to invest in listening to this episode, and I'm sure there's some really good nuggets they've gathered from this conversation, is what kind of action plan, what type of step would you tell them, listen, based on what we talked about here, here's what you need to do. Because you brought up a good point. It's not just about vision. You have to be a person of action. You have to take steps and actually do the work. If someone's in that position and they're listening to this now, and maybe they really need to take that next step on an investment, or take that next step and they're stuck in a W-2, what would you say they should do after this call?
All right. It's two steps. It's really two pieces. Because one, I need you to figure out what that better version of you looks like. What's the version of you that you like and respect better? Does that person have more investments? Does that person make better financial choices? Does that person go to the gym more? Do they read more? I don't know. You got to figure out what that person, what that guy, what that gal looks like. And then what I would tell you to do is make the different choices today to be more like that person. I don't ask you to be that person today. I ask you to take and start taking the steps necessary to become more like that person today. Do today differently. Commit to do today differently than yesterday. That's the W. All I want to do, guys, is throw up a W today. I want today to be a little better than I was yesterday, and a little closer to who I want to be. Because here's the thing. You throw up a W today, and you throw up a W tomorrow. You know what that's called? A win streak. And guess what that turns you into? A winner. And guess what winners do? They win. And when you have a win streak of 50, 60 days, all of a sudden, you really don't want to blow that win streak. And when you lose one, you're like, what the hell was that? That's not what we do. We win. You got to listen to Joe Torre talk about the 98 Yankees and how they won. He talked about a team, they come up winning 10 straight. They lose a game. They come in the next day, they're pissed off. What the hell was that? We don't lose.
That's right.
Guys, that's how winning is done. It's not by taking giant steps.
I'd like to tell you, Josh, first of all, you know what else people like is people want to be around winners like yourself. And so at the end of the day, you surround yourself with winners and you find yourself continuing to win. So listen, I know you have to go.
I do, Jeff. Sorry.
No, you're good, man. We could keep talking for hours. We've learned a lot here from this. I want to thank you personally for coming on and spending your time before you go and speak at this conference to come on board the Legacy Builders podcast. And I really will. I'm going to reach out to you. Let's do this again. And we've got a round two we can cover in the future. But I want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen. And Josh, tell me a little bit, how could everybody reach out and find you?
Best thing I could suggest to people that are interested in what you're doing is, even if you're not in real estate, Close for Life, the first part of that book that I wrote for McGraw-Hill on Amazon. It goes into a lot of this mindset of being a good CEO for yourself. If you want to find me, closeforlife.com. You can find all the stuff that I do, classes that I teach, whatever. Best place to find me. And social media, Josh Cadillac. Or Josh D. Cadillac on Instagram.
Beautiful. Listen, everybody, you go check out Josh. Listen, learn more from him. A lot of the good stuff we've learned here today. Josh, thanks again for coming on board today. And I want to invite everybody back for our next episode. And we'll see you next time.